Our title today is Confessions of a Burned Out Homemaker, and so I figured if that was my provocative title, then I did actually need to make some confessions. So sorry, checking text during my teaching, that's super inappropriate. I don't know if Mandy can cut this part out of the teaching when we post it on the website, but that would be ideal. Did you ever have one of those years when you're really relieved to see January roll around and you hope and you pray that the next year is better? That was my 2014 and 2015. After a lot of discussion, my husband quit his job and went back to school and transitioned into a new career. And several months later, I had our fourth baby. And a few months after that, Glenn started a new job with a two-hour commute. Then I sprained my ankle and had to wheel my four-month-old around the house in a stroller because I couldn't walk and carry him at the same time. We spent a few frustrating months looking for a new house, which took us 4 months to close on. I got an excruciatingly painful ear infection, and then I re-sprained my ankle. When we finally closed on our new home, it took a month to finish the work to make it move-in ready. And with the help of some sweet, sweet friends, we finally moved into our new home on January 17th, 2015. The next morning, my brother called to tell me my grandma had passed away in the night. I drove 4 hours home with my then 10-month-old and spent 2 days with my family, celebrating the sweetest woman I've ever known. And I came home exhausted to a house full of unpacked boxes, contractor dust, and appliances that would not stop breaking. I was in the middle of the school year homeschooling a kindergartner and a second grader with a three-year-old and baby underfoot. We were burning through about $400 worth of fuel oil every month, heating our house to a balmy 60 degrees and running space heaters in the main living spaces to try to keep things comfortable. Our hot water tank was filled with bacteria from the well, and it smelled like sulfur every time we ran hot water. The dishwasher stopped working and the dryer died, so I had the pleasure of hanging all of our laundry on a clothesline in the basement and spending an hour or more washing and drying dishes every night. Birthing a 10-pound, 6-ounce baby the previous year had left some lingering issues, the most concerning of which was my inability to walk with a normal stride, and I had chronic back and hip pain. And due to the upheaval of the past year, my then 1-year-old was waking up multiple times during the night. I was tired and in pain and burned out. I limped through the rest of 2015, literally and figuratively, and when 2016 came along, I nearly hugged it with relief. It's been a long 2 years. Before that 2-year period of my life, I would have felt very confident sharing with you the ins and outs of my homemaking and how I manage my home and family. My routines and rituals were well-oiled machines, and most days I was the boss of my to-do list. However, the past 2 years have felt a lot like starting over again, and it's only in the past few months that I felt like I have my feet under me again. And while I was in it, those 2 years seemed like a lot more than I could handle at times, and looking back, I can see so clearly how God provided and how he protected us. And now that I have a little bit of perspective, I realize how focused on myself I was and how much worse things could have been and how so many people deal with problems a lot bigger than what I was dealing with. So I'm trying to redeem that time that at first glance seems like a big waste. First, by focusing on the ways God brought me through it. And then also by thinking through the things that wore me down and how I could have handled those situations better. So that's what I have to offer you today, advice on the gentle art of homemaking from the perspective of someone who felt like she had it all together and had it fall apart and started all over again. When I finally looked around the wasteland of laundry and dishes that was my home and began to dig into the process, getting my life in order, the thing I had to keep laser focused on was that homemaking matters to the Lord. Being a wife and mother is made up of a million tiny tasks that go unnoticed most of the time. And so it feels like much of what we do doesn't matter, but it does. When I was looking for some perspective during my homemaking reboot, I spent some time looking at the Proverbs 31 woman. She's the ultimate homemaker, and it's hard to have a conversation about homemaking without bringing her up. The woman discussed in those verses, which are on the front page of your handout, isn't an actual person, but a description of an ideal. The book of Proverbs is wisdom literature, not commandments. So fortunately, we don't have to live up to her standard line by line, but just emulate the sort of person that she was. The description of the Proverbs 31 woman is actually an acrostic poem where each line starts with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And many of the verses discuss the stuff that this woman does, but I think it's important to note that her actions are sandwiched in between verses that praise her character and her fear of the Lord. Verses 10 through 12 and 26 through 29, which I have bolded on your outline, are focused on her inner person and the regard her family members have for her. And the verses in between show us how she lives her life. In addition to being a woman of strength and character, whose husband and children give her high praise, she's a woman who works very hard to care for her home and the people in it. She manages her time well, she's careful to spend money on things that are high quality, and she invests money well. She anticipates the needs of her family and ensures the household is well stocked. Verse 18 says, her lamp does not go out at night, and I feel like that's the biblical equivalent of not running out of toilet paper. Verse 14 compares her to the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. We take for granted all the food that's available to us in Ohio. Almost everything we eat, especially through the winter, is imported. But think back to Old Testament Jerusalem. Can you imagine the excitement when one of those ships came in? The best merchandise from all around the world. So they're comparing the Proverbs lady to those ships sourcing the best stuff for her household. And I bet she would have loved Amazon Prime. Verse 21 says she doesn't fear the snow. Jerusalem didn't get a ton of snow, so you can imagine how it shut everything down when they got the Israel version of Lake Effect. So no snow plows, no furnaces, markets would have been closed, cooking would have been a lot more difficult, but the Proverbs 31 woman was prepared. Verses 16, 18, and 24 also tell us she found ways to bring in money while still keeping her home and her family her main focus. This woman was really the whole package. And finally, her description closes with praise for the way she speaks and teaches her children and how she fears the Lord. So the way we manage our homes matters, but our hearts matter more. Do we need to make homemade pennant banners for our kids' birthdays to be good homemakers? Do we need to have 3 months of freezer meals? Do we need to have the perfect cleaning schedule printable that we framed and check off with a dry erase marker? Thankfully, no. But there's a certain amount of thoughtfulness and organization that makes homemaking a lot easier. And today I'm going to share the process that I use to get my life back together after months and months of living in survival mode. And so we have here the homemaking pyramid of greatness. And the base of it is survival mode. So let's talk about that for a bit. Survival mode isn't always caused by bad things. Babies, job promotions, home renovations, they can all feel like a crisis. And in those times, you have to focus on the basics to get you through until life is a little less chaotic. And these basics are the base of our homemaking pyramid, and they usually consist of food, laundry, and dishes. For food, when in crisis mode, one way to take the stress out of meal planning is to have a list of 10 or so go-to meals that are easy to make and pretty much everyone in the family likes. You make a list, you go to the grocery store, you buy what you need for those meals, and those 10 should last you about 2 weeks if you have leftovers a few nights and maybe order pizza. My list is spaghetti, taco salad, curry, hamburgers, roast chicken, fettuccine alfredo, chicken burritos, soup and salad, breakfast for supper, always popular, and sandwiches. I don't need to look up any of the recipes for these things. I can list the ingredients I need off the top of my head. I can cook enough beef and chicken to cover several meals and save a little time. Everyone likes these, so I won't hear any whining, causing further stress. And I can buy convenience foods to lighten the load. Bagged salad mix, pre-made hamburger patties, frozen french fries, rotisserie chicken instead of roasting it myself, jarred Alfredo sauce, canned soup, frozen waffles, whatever you need to get you through crisis mode. And by having a plan in place before the crisis hits, you'll be able to have it ready when the stressful time rolls around. Laundry. This is a rule that I actually follow even when I'm not in crisis mode, but the one load rule. Do one load, start to finish, folding it and putting away before you start another one. For some of you, you're wondering why I would even mention this because it seems kind of basic, but for others, this may be kind of revolutionary for you. The reasoning behind the one load rule is that we all have those times where we do two or three or four or five loads of laundry to get caught up, and they all sit on the couch, we fold about half of it, and the small person comes through and wrecks all of the work that we just did. So by doing one load at a time, start to finish, you keep that from happening. And big piles of laundry often feel really overwhelming, but one load seems more manageable. And dishes. Anything you can do to make the cooking process simpler and keep cleanup minimal is going to be helpful. So paper plates, plastic cups, and utensils. And I know this sounds crazy, but run the dishwasher even if it's not completely full. I can't tell you how many times I haven't run the dishwasher because it's only about 80% full, and then the next day I'm hand washing dishes because there's stuff in the dishwasher that I need. And it's amazing to me how much that messes up the rest of my day. So in the midst of stressful times, if you're able to keep these three things going, everyone will be fed and clothed. And if we can manage baths and showers every once in a while, then that's good too. But we don't want to stay in survival mode. I think I missed some slides here. We don't want to stay in survival mode. The purpose of having a plan for those stressful times is that it helps us to keep our heads above water until we can get our lives in order again. So you don't serve those same 10 meals throughout the whole year, just for a few weeks until you have the time and energy to build your rhythms and routines again. And that's the next level of the homemaking pyramid of greatness, rhythms and routines. Even if you're still in survival mode, you can start working on finding a rhythm to your day and building simple routines to help you keep up with your life. Years ago, I heard a piece of time management advice that was a game changer for me. And probably a lot of you have already heard it. It's not all that revolutionary, but you have 24 hours in each day, and there's a limit to what you can do in 24 hours. So the way you spend them needs to reflect your biggest priorities. Planning when to do specific tasks rather than just trying to power through your to-do list helps to give you time for what's important and also know when to do what. I asked several moms to give me a rundown of their daily schedule, and the handout is in front of you. And you can see how families with different ages and numbers of children arrange their days differently. You can see one of these moms is more of a night owl and gets a lot of work done late in the evenings. Another mom gets up really early because her kids' schedules necessitate it. And you can see how as you add children and as the children enter school, it takes more careful scheduling to make sure everything gets done. You might have heard the story about a college professor who put a big glass jar in his desk and filled it up with large rocks and asked the class, is the jar full? And they all said, yeah, it's full. We can see that there's a ton of rocks in there. And then he took a bunch of pebbles and dumped it into the jar, filled in all those cracks and crevices. Now is the jar full? Yeah, the jar's full. We saw that you just filled it up. And then he took a big container of sand and poured it in over the rocks and pebbles and was able to fill in completely the jar. Then the jar was completely full. And so the point of that is, if you put the sand and the pebbles in first, there's not room for the rocks. And the rocks represent the big things in life, the important things, our relationship with the Lord. Yes. Oh, sure. Sure. So the point of that is, if we're not giving first priority to our relationship with the Lord, to our husbands, to our kids, if we're letting Pinterest and Instagram and hobbies, the sand of our life, fill up our time first, then we don't have enough time left over for the things that are really important. So we're talking mostly about pebbles and sand today. These things aren't the center of our lives. Our relationship with the Lord comes first, but there is a certain amount of work that needs to be done. My time in the Word and praying every day is essential, but I also need to make breakfast. Having deep, meaningful conversations with my husband is important, but I also need to make sure that the bathroom isn't a biohazard. Spending time with my kids and teaching and training them is one of the most important things that I do, but they also need to learn how to make their beds and put their clothes away. So the rocks of our lives need to be our main focus, but it's hard to keep that focus when our homes are a disaster. The more smoothly our homes run, the more it frees us up to focus on what really matters. And I don't know about you, but the more smoothly my home runs, the calmer and happier I am. Ultimately, I can't blame a messy house for my bad mood, but I can't deny that when my home life is chaotic, it puts me on edge, and it's also stressful for my husband and kids. So building strong routines when your kids are young can be incredibly beneficial, because as your kids get older, those routines will already be in place and they'll be easily built upon. Even though my younger two don't read yet, when they get up, they get a Bible off the shelf and they sit and they do their Bible study time with the older kids. And in a few years when they are reading, that routine will already be in place. 3 or 4 years ago, when I couldn't walk through the dining room without getting crumbs on my feet, I purchased a cheap stick vacuum from Walmart and taught my oldest how to use it. And then I taught her how to wipe off the table. And I taught her brother how to wipe off the chairs and pick up large crumbs and napkins off the floor. And ever since then, after meals, one of the kids wipes the table and chairs and another vacuums. So if you're looking for chore ideas for your kids, Doing a search for age-appropriate chores or chores by age on Pinterest or Google will give you a lot of ideas, so I'm not going to go over that today. But having your kids begin to take over some of the household cleaning means they won't do it like you do it. I'm really fussy about how the towels are folded, and I hung on to that chore for a really long time because I don't like seeing messily folded towels in the linen closet. But one night, my 8-year-old saw the pile of towels sitting on the couch, and they'd been sitting there for a couple of days. And she folded them and she put them away, and it was magical. The best part is our new house has 2 bathrooms, so I don't see how the towels in the kids' bathroom are folded, just the ones in our bathroom, so I might refold our towels sometimes. But interestingly enough, the way that Reagan folded the kitchen towels and put them in the drawer fit a lot better than the way I had been doing it. So now folding the towels is her job. And I honestly don't work on chores a lot with our 2-year-old because it takes forever and I have a lot of stuff to do. But right now I'm more concerned with him being obedient and not hitting people. But in another year or so, when he's in a big boy bed and he can dress himself, then he'll learn to make his bed and put his clothes away and clear his dishes. And before you know it, he'll be scrubbing toilets and detailing the car. So this is my schedule. It's the 8, 6, 4 and 2-year-old portion on your handout. I work outside the home a few hours a week as a childbirth educator, and I occasionally attend births as a doula. The nature of that job is that I spend a lot of time reading and researching and doing continuing education type stuff. And homeschooling requires reading and researching and preparation as well. So having a lot of order to my day is really crucial. I can probably speak for all the moms who gave me these schedules when I say this is a normal, no emergencies, very average sort of day. If someone is sick or we have out-of-town guests or a big event, it might look a little bit different. If I've been up all night with a sick kid or I'm sick myself, I'll probably sleep until the kids wake up and then have my 8-year-old make breakfast while I take a shower. Or if grandma and grandpa come to visit, I may cancel school and run to Starbucks with my laptop and work on homeschool stuff for a while. My morning is pretty typical. I get up, shower, get dressed, eat, and do Bible study. The kids get up around 7:30 and do their Bible study, and I make breakfast at 8. Chores start at 8:30, and that's our goal to start school by 9 and be done by 12. And you'll see I have something called margin scheduled at noon and a couple other times during the day. Having a little bit of free time built into my day helps me deal with unexpected things without it wrecking everything. Sometimes we have a blowout diaper and I need to stop everything to bathe a baby and do a load of laundry. Sometimes I oversleep. Sometimes the kids are having a really bad day and we need to stop and spend a little time working through an issue. But whatever the reason, leaving some free space in the day helps to alleviate the stress of getting off schedule. Now, if your kids are really small, you probably don't need this amount of scheduling and margin, but it's just something to keep in mind as your life gets to be a little more full. To help me stay on track during the day, since our schedule is so important, I have alarms set on my tablet for meals, and also for quiet time, when I need to start prepping supper, when it's time to start our bedtime routine. It's really easy to get off schedule and get distracted by things, so having something in my day that kind of keeps me on track is very helpful. And it also helps the kids understand the structure of our day. Doing things close to the same time every day lets your kids know what to expect. So once they can tell time, they don't need to ask you when lunch is because they'll know. It's at 12:30. And they also like knowing what's coming next, and it motivates them to stay on task. They know, my kids know, if they take too long doing morning chores and we start school later than normal, we may have to use their playtime or TV time to catch up on school. And if they don't finish after supper chores and get ready for bed in a timely manner, we may not have as much time to read in the evening. So that keeps them very motivated to do what they need to do and not dawdle. And you'll see on my schedule a large chunk of time in the afternoon when I get a lot of stuff done called quiet time. When our kids don't need naps anymore, we transition to quiet time. As long as I don't hear or see them during quiet time, I don't care what they're doing. And this has been really critical because it gives me time in the afternoon to work on childbirth classes and plan for school and do random things that are hard to do when there are kids around. And also as an introvert who homeschools her kids and is with them all day, every day, I need time by myself too. During those 2 years of stress and exhaustion, sometimes I needed to sleep during quiet time. So don't despair when your child gives up a nap. Move them straight to quiet time and help them develop the habit of playing quietly. It's good for their imaginations. So the schedule, the section on rhythms and routines. What's the difference between a rhythm and routine? Well, for my purposes, the difference is the rhythm of my day is what I just outlined, how I allot the 24 hours that I have. And routines are the details within those time blocks, a series of tasks with a specific purpose. Once you have a general rhythm, you can ensure you're getting all your homemaking tasks accomplished by making them part of a routine. Some people hold on to routines that they grew up with. Some people intuitively create a routine without really thinking about it. And some people need to stop and think through what the next logical thing to do is. Glenn and I have 4 kids in homeschool, so the rhythms and routines of caring for a larger family and home educating aren't always intuitive for me, since I grew up with 1 sibling and we both went to public school and my parents worked full time. So in order to create a routine, especially in our early years, and then again after that 2-year stretch of nonstop excitement, I had to stop and think through what good routines would be for our family. If your day is working well for you, you probably don't need to sit down and plot this all out, but maybe someday you will, so just keep it in mind. A good place to start is with your before bed routine. A great start to your day begins the night before. What time do you need to get up? Make sure you go to bed early enough to get a decent night's sleep. Do you have somewhere to go or something to do early the next day? Pick out your clothes all the way down to your shoes. Sit out your purse, find your keys and your cell phone, pick out clothes for your kids, pack the diaper bag and anything else you'll need, and put it by the door, or just go ahead and put it in the car. Does anything need to be defrosted for dinner tomorrow? Do you pack your kids or your husband's lunch? Maybe it would be easier if you did that the night before. Do you drink coffee or tea? Get your mug and prep the coffee maker or sit out your favorite tea. If you do your Bible study in the morning, get all your materials out and put them where you usually sit for morning devotions. Before I climb into bed, I like to do a final walkthrough of the house and pick up anything that's lying around, laundry or random things that aren't put away. If one of the kids wakes up in the night and I get up with them, it's likely I'll trip over anything left in the living room. So I've had enough near-death experiences caused by a stray toy to last a while. So this habit really pays off for me. Set a time for your bedtime routine, maybe right after the kids go to bed, and then you can spend the rest of your evening relaxing because you know that you're ready for the next day. My before bed routine, pretty basic. Change into my jammies, brush and floss, tidy up the house, put my Bible study basket on the love seat, put my to-do list on the corner of the desk, and decide what to have for dinner tomorrow and defrost stuff if necessary. After you've established a good before bed routine, come up with a morning routine. I'm happy with shower, eat breakfast, start a load of laundry, and Bible study. Since we homeschool, it's rare that we have any place that we have to be early in the morning, so I could be a little more relaxed with what I do first thing in the morning. If you have to get kids to school or preschool or some other activity, having a more specific routine might be helpful, especially if you have trouble getting out of the door on time. When we have somewhere to go, I always determine what our 0 hour is. What time do we have to walk out the door so that we're not rushing to get somewhere? What's traffic going to be like that time of day? Do I need to be concerned about the weather? Will I have to get snow off the car or shovel the driveway? Once I've determined my 0 hour, I work backwards from there so that I don't have to rush to get someplace on time. If you're nursing a baby, you need to leave yourself a lot of extra time because it's usually when you have somewhere to go that they take a super long time to eat. As your kids get older, teach them how to use an alarm clock and how to prep the things they'll need in the morning. When we have Motherhood Connection, my school-age kids know how to grab their workbooks and pens and books, as well as their portable DVD player and a movie if they finish their schoolwork. And now that they know how to do those things, I don't have to do it. Your 2 or 3-year-old won't be able to do that, but as they observe you doing these routines, they'll start to pick up on them. And another routine you can use is an after-breakfast routine. Mine is to switch laundry to the dryer, unload the dishwasher if necessary, clean up the Keurig and refill the water, wipe down the counters, and make sure the kids are doing their chores. And then we start school, take a short break and eat lunch, and then I have an after-lunch routine and an after-dinner routine. You may not need that many routines, and that's fine. However much routine you need to make your day work well is what you should plan. So if that's just a morning routine and a before bed routine, and that's working for you, don't spend a ton of time planning if you don't need to. Plan to the extent that you need your life to be organized. For me, that's a lot of planning. If you have, you know, a 1 and a 3-year-old, you may not need quite so much planning, and that's fine. These aren't revolutionary routines. A lot of you probably already have little routines like this anyway. But if there's an area of your life that you're struggling to keep up with, you can always piggyback on an already established habit and make establishing that new habit easier. I always brush my teeth before bed because I feel gross if I don't. So even if I'm exhausted, I brush my teeth. But I don't always remember to floss. You have to get out the little box and break off a piece of floss and cut off circulation in your fingers. And it's gross and annoying. But then I discovered the little flossers. And so I got some of those, much handier, but I still was not flossing. I wasn't reaching in the drawer to grab the little flosser. So I took the flosser and I attached it to my toothbrush with a hair elastic, and now it is physically in my hand while I'm brushing my teeth, and I almost always remember to floss now. So finding a way to find that, to take that little habit and attach it to something that you're already pretty disciplined about, can make forming a new habit easier. And you can find ways to do that for your kids too, but that's how I learned to floss and became a real grown-up. So before we moved, Reagan unloaded the dishwasher for me, but because of the new layout of the house, it's hard for her to reach things, so I took that task back. And initially, I forgot about it because I just wasn't accustomed to, when we did finally get the new dishwasher that worked, I wasn't accustomed to unloading the dishwasher in the morning. And so I would end up having to pull things out of there midday. And one morning when I did remember to unload the dishwasher, I did it while the Keurig was brewing a cup of coffee. And I realized that I could unload almost the entire dishwasher in the time it took to brew that cup of coffee. So I attached the new habit of unloading the dishwasher to my very well-established habit of brewing a cup of coffee. And now it's easy to stay on top of that task because it's automatic. I'm making my cup of coffee, I'm unloading the dishwasher. So how much you plot out these routines depends a lot on how busy you are. Again, if you feel like you're accomplishing what you need to accomplish, then your routines are probably pretty solid. If you are struggling to keep up with your life, you may need better routines. So let's take a minute and talk about tools of the trade. I can't remember how many years ago it was, Rebecca and I did the homemaking thing. This may be the exact same binder that I shared. I like binders. They're pretty and fun. They keep my stuff together. All I keep in here is, it's mostly random stuff. Pictures and notes and passwords and things. This is a little list of typical breakfast and lunch and dinner items. I used to have a large recipe binder that I used. Well, ideally I would have used it, but I realized after a while I don't actually use this. It sits in the drawer. It's not accessible enough. It's too big. I have to pull it out of the drawer. So that little binder ended up not being helpful. So I realized I need to ditch this and come up with a better plan. So in the process of the move, I pulled all of the recipes out. And so this is what I've got right now. Not the best system ever. But my plan is to type these up and have them in my binder, because most of my recipes, I just need to write down the ingredients and, you know, bake at 350 for 25 minutes or whatever it is. Most of these are well-established recipes, so I don't need a big complicated system. And also our meal planning has changed a little bit because we started doing the Fresh Fork CSA and we get food every Friday. And so a lot of my meal planning is based on what I get in my bag of stuff. So I'm not meal planning for weeks or months at a time anymore. I plan, you know, 6 to 8 meals for the next week out. So it just depends on, you know, if we get kielbasa in our bag, then I'm making that at some point during the week. So in that way, our homemaking or my meal planning has changed. But for some people, freezer cooking or using the crock pot all the time is really helpful. So you just kind of have to find the thing that works well for your stage of life and then plan some routines around that. So also in the binder, I have little worksheets for things like, this is my seasonal, not goals, I guess, but fun things to do with our family. And if I don't plan fun stuff to do, we just don't ever do anything fun. We're not spontaneous like that. So even little things like, you know, catching tadpoles in the pond or tromping through the woods or having a bonfire or stuff like that, it's good for me to have this list where I kind of look at, okay, we need to plan some fun stuff to do over the summer, or, you know, we need to you know, make homemade Valentines this year. Not because I need more stuff to do, but just because our life can't be complete drudgery, it's good to have some fun stuff in the mix. And then I just have folders in the back that keep all of the random paperwork together You wouldn't think that as a stay-at-home mom we would have a ton of paperwork, but you know, there's receipts and stuff for insurance and you know, little drawings and things, a Valentine's Day card from my husband, stuff that I don't really have a place for yet, but I don't want it to just be laying in a pile because my kids will destroy it or the cat will get into it or something. So nothing revolutionary. It's just where all the paperwork goes. At the beginning, I used to have a little daily docket. And I don't know how well you can see these, but I made both of these. And it was basically just a place where I could jot down all the random to-do lists. So the one on the left, the top right corner, I have my schedule and meal plan for the week. The next box down is childbirth education, so tasks I had for that, school tasks. And then the other side is just, you know, here's all of the stuff that I'm not going to remember, so I have to write it down. If you remember to do all of your stuff without a to-do list, then more power to you. But if I don't write it down, then it doesn't happen. It doesn't exist to me. So that worked really well for a long time. But one of the things that I struggled with was I had all these tasks, but I didn't have a really good rhythm to my day yet. And so I did this one on the right-hand side, and it has a little hour-by-hour schedule along the side. And so then I was able to write in, okay, this is when we're doing school. This is when I have a chunk of time where I can get to some of these to-do tasks. And rather than having a big, long list of like 25 things that I need to do, all that goes on this piece of paper, which is actually a half sheet, is my top four priorities for the day, because that's about the level of stuff I'm going to be able to get done other than school and the normal things. Household chores, you know, stuff like that. So if you're interested in any of these, I can email them to you. But having some place where all of my stuff that I need to do in the course of a day is all together, this is the little list that I put on the corner of my desk every night. And then the next day when I get up, I don't have to think about what I need to do. I already decided the night before. And so things actually get done sometimes, which is handy. A lot of people use apps for this sort of stuff. I'm not really an app person. I've tried, I'm just not good at it. But Google Calendar, I've listed several of them on your handout there. Oh, that's the grocery list. Evernote, there's an app called Our Groceries, which apparently is very helpful. Pinterest, does anybody else have apps that they use for this sort of stuff, keeping track of their life? Just shout them out.
I use Out of Milk for my grocery list.
Okay, Out of Milk, yeah, I've heard of that one. Anything else?
Use errands. It's not really for errands, it's just you can use it for any kind of to-do list, and you have multiple kinds of folders you can make.
Okay.
Checklist. I use Motivated Moms for cleaning too.
Okay.
That's the first one that I've tried a lot of cleaning apps, and that's the first one that's actually like helpful.
Okay.
My house,
okay. And that's a good point too, that you know, there's a ton of apps out there, but you have to find, just like any other system, you have to find something that works for you. So Motivated Moms was the one that worked for you. So if one app doesn't work for you, there's a ton of apps for everything. So if you are a person that likes to have reminders and to-do lists on your phone or your tablet or your computer, lots of ways to do that. I'm a pen and paper sort of person. Just the act of writing it down solidifies it in my mind. So sometimes I don't even actually need to look at the to-do list because my hand will remember writing it. It'll be in my brain, and that's really helpful for me. We talked about groceries quickly. One of the things that I did to make my life easier was pre-type up a grocery list. So this hangs on our fridge, and when I need stuff, I circle it. And I do have blank spaces in there, because occasionally there's something random that I don't buy every single week that I need to write on the list. But Aldi is where I do most of my shopping. A lot of the rest of our food comes in from Fresh Pork on Fridays. Got a little Walmart and Target list, Giant Eagle, Marks, and stuff I need to order off of Amazon. So one of the nice things, especially about the Aldi list, is I can stand in my kitchen with the list and just open a cupboard and say, oh, yep, we need almonds, we're out of almonds. And so it takes a lot of the thinking out of it. I used to just have a blank list, and that worked pretty well too when I noticed that I'm out of something, you know, just jot it down. But even then, I would sometimes forget, oh, we're out of that. But by having a list of stuff that I know I need to keep in our house pretty much all the time, when I open up my cupboard and look and see, oh, I'm completely out of rice or almost out of rice, it helps to keep me on top of that. So, this is just in an Excel spreadsheet, but you could, you know, type it into Word or I'm sure there's an app for this. But I'm not gonna get on my computer or pick up my tablet when we run out of rice. I'm gonna walk over to my fridge and circle it. And I need a physical, I don't have a smartphone, so I need something in my hand when I'm at the grocery store, so this works well for me. Okay, so we have our rhythms and routines going. We have some tools to help us take care of those random tasks. Oh, I forgot to talk about my bullet journal. I'm just gonna talk about this briefly. Does anyone know what a bullet journal is? Is anyone into Bujo? No? One of the things that I was struggling with my binder was I have a lot of things that I'm keeping track of, both for homemaking, for childbirth education, for school, random things of life. So I wanted a way to siphon that all into one location. And the bullet journal, I probably saw it on Pinterest because that's where all good ideas come from, is a way to do that. And so you can use it to the extent that you need it. I kind of got away from doing those, you know, month-long to-do lists. This is my March spread. Anything that I think of that needs to get done, I write down on this page. I'm trying to do some color coding, but I'm finding that's inconvenient because if I don't have colored pens with me, then it just doesn't happen. So I need to just come up with a little symbol that this is household tasks and this is school or whatever. But I have this running list, and then when I'm thinking about what I need to do the next day, I take my little daily docket, I look over here and think, okay, this is the stuff that really has to get done, and jot it down. And then on the other side, this is where I'm putting my meal plan. So I've got 4 weeks laid out. And so every day I open this up, I look at it, and I figure out, okay, this is what we need to have for supper. So I'll defrost that. These are the three or four things I need to do tomorrow. And then I have other little running lists. The meat that we have in our freezer, I have in there. What we're getting with our next order from Fresh Fork is in there. And you can make these really pretty and fun. But the nice thing is when you need to write down a list of something, or you're, you know, brainstorming, or if you're creative and you like to do a little bit of journaling, you just turn to the next page and start writing stuff down, and then you index everything at the front. So if you're really creative, if you like drawing and sketching and stuff like that, this is really fun because you can do that sort of stuff. I only steal creativity from other people, so most of the time the stuff that I write down is pretty basic, but it can be a nice way to also, you know, if you'd like to keep more track of little things that happen with your kids and, you know, sentimental stuff, then you can jot stuff down in one of these too, and then it's all kind of together in one spot. So I don't need to think about where's the list of essential oils that I want to order. It's in here, and it's indexed, so I can just look through the table of contents, essential oils, and then find it in there. But there's a ton of videos, and it's a deep, dark world, so Facebook groups and all sorts of stuff. But it's really fun, and it's really changed the way that I get stuff done around the house. So I thought it was worth mentioning.
What was it called?
Bullet journaling. Yeah, it's a whole world. All right, so next on the pyramid of homemaking greatness is simplifying and purging. The most fantastic routines in the world are not going to work all that well if you're trying to clean and work around a bunch of junk and clutter in your house. But the first thing you want to think about is simplifying your lifestyle. You want to look at the commitments you and your husband and your children have outside the home, and how much of your time are those activities taking up. Another great piece of time management advice that I heard a few years ago is whenever you have the opportunity to do something or asked to do something, whether it's volunteering for an event or going to dinner with friends or to a conference or doing some sort of work outside the home, if that thing is months away, you'll look at your calendar and think, wow, look at how not busy I am. I, of course, can do that thing. But that's a bad way to plan, because chances are your schedule is going to be just as busy then as it is right now. So you need to think about, if I was asked to do that thing next week, would I be able to fit it in my schedule? And if the answer is no, definitely not, really think about whether you want to say yes to that thing. But if, you know, whatever the thing that you're contemplating doing is so worthwhile for your family or fun or whatever that you would make space in your schedule next week to do it, then it might be something worth adding to your schedule. But that's a good way to think about long-term planning, because it's so easy to say yes to things that are months away. So that's a good way to keep you from overcommitting yourself long-term. My life is really full right now, so I have to say no to a lot of things, and sometimes that bums me out, but most of the time it makes me less stressed out because I am not running to and from a million things throughout my week, and I don't feel overextended. So what about simplifying our stuff? We want to keep two principles in mind, the beautiful and useful principle and the principle of sunk cost. A lot of you have probably heard this before. If it is not something that is beautiful and useful in your home, really question whether it needs to be there. Somehow after we got moved and I started unpacking, I found item and item that I looked at and thought, why did we move this? And I decluttered a lot before we moved. And then in January, when we were hitting the 1 year anniversary of being in our house, I went through everything again and thought, I haven't touched this for more than a year other than when I packed it. Why am I hanging on to this stuff? So some people hate to throw things away. Some people like to collect things. Some people have hobbies that require hobby-related stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that unless it's making it difficult for you to keep your life in order. And sometimes it's hard to get rid of things because of its value or it's sentimental. And then you can kind of use the principle of sunk cost. In economics and business, a sunk cost is a cost that has already been incurred and cannot be recovered. 9 years ago, when I was just about to have our first baby, I had big plans to make a fantastic baby book for her. I invested a lot of money in scrapbooking supplies, and then our little baby arrived, and it was months and months before I even thought about that scrapbook. I finally managed to get some pictures developed, but then forgot about the scrapbook again for a while, and then I got pregnant with baby number two. And it wasn't until baby number four arrived that I realized the money I'd spent on that scrapbooking stuff couldn't be recouped. And if I couldn't carve out the time to put together the baby book before, it certainly was not going to happen with four children. So I gave away the scrapbook and handed over the pretty paper and glitter pens and stickers to my super crafty daughter, and those items finally got used. And as for the baby book, I spent a few hours one afternoon uploading photos to Shutterfly, and I made a family photo album that covered several years, not just her baby book. If I'd thrown in the towel a little bit sooner on that project, I would have saved space by getting rid of all of the stuff. I would have saved time by not having to pack it all and move it to two different houses and continue to find spots for it in a house with no storage. And I would have saved myself the mental energy of feeling guilty about not doing it. So, other ways to simplify. The one in, one out rule. If you buy something and bring it into your home, especially if it's a toy or book or item that there's a lot of, consider getting rid of it. This is a good thing for clothes. Most of us have clothes in our closet that we haven't worn for months or years. And so if you buy something new, get rid of something in your closet. Ask family members for experience gifts for birthdays or Christmas, or when you're giving gifts to each other, do an experience rather than, you know, toys or clothes or books or whatever. Get a membership to the zoo or horseback riding lessons or whatever, something that is fun for your family to go to but doesn't bring more stuff into your house. Have a spot where things go that you want to take to Goodwill, you know, a bin or a basket or something that is off in the corner where you can think, oh, I need to get rid of this. But a lot of times that one item, you'll sit it by the door or you'll put it someplace random and it gets moved around, and then you find it again and think, oh, I need to take this to Goodwill. So having a dedicated spot for that stuff is helpful. And there are lots of clutter challenges online. One is in the Beautiful Useful Project. I put the website on your outline. But you can find stuff like this on any number of lifestyle blogs or on Pinterest. And once you've simplified and purged, we're going to move on to organizing. And organizing your stuff doesn't have to be overwhelming. Organizing is about everything having a home. When you have too much stuff, it's impossible to find a home for everything, but when you've whittled your stuff down to your belongings that are only beautiful or useful to you, then it becomes a lot easier. If you want a paperclip in my house, there's one place to get a paperclip. If you want a phone charger, it's in the wooden bowl next to the microwave. And if you're looking for a library book, it's in the box on the shelf in the living room. Toothpaste and toothbrushes go in the cup on the bathroom counter. Shoes and coats go in the entry closet. So when figuring out where the home for your item should be, think about how often you use it. If it's used a lot, it needs to be someplace that's easily accessible. I use my knives multiple times throughout the day, so those are sitting on the counter. Food processor, not so much, so that's put away in a cupboard. Make it easy to put the item away. I put this cubby in my kids' room because they used to have a bookshelf in there. And when kids take multiple books off of bookshelf. They all fall over, and after a while, they just start jamming them on there, however they'll fit, and then they eventually fall on the floor, and it becomes a mess. We already had this for something else. It's just one of those 9 cubby little shelves you can get them at Walmart or Target. But because the cubbies are small, it's easy for them to keep the books in order. So by making it easy to put away, the kids keep their books nice and tidy. And once your kids get older, if you can find one of them that likes organizing, then they'll make sure that all of the book series go together, that they're in order by size. But even if they don't do that, they're still on the shelf and not on the floor, which is a big victory. You want to keep like objects together. Office supplies in one location, baking ingredients in one bin from a dollar store, first aid supplies all together. But keeping like items together, you don't have to think so much about where the home should be. I bought new Band-Aids. Where should they go? They should go in the box with all the first aid supplies. You don't have to think about it. And taking the decision making out of all of these things makes it easier to keep up with. And containerize. This is my freezer. You knew this was going to be an exciting PowerPoint. Yeah. You see pictures of the inside of my freezer. Frozen foods go in the freezer, obviously, but throwing in these $1 plastic, I know you're shocked, but putting this little $1 plastic bins from the dollar store in there helps me see what we have. So I usually kind of try to keep pork, chicken, beef in their own little thing. Chicken nuggets and fish sticks go in the door because we have those once a week. Frozen veggies are in one container. So, you know, whatever little categories. And even if you don't categorize, just have a place because it, you know, it's just open shelving. Having some way to kind of contain things a little bit helps you to look in the freezer and see what you have. Because it's frustrating when you're meal planning and figuring out what you're going to make and you go to the store and then you buy something that you already have. So just using little bins to keep things together is really helpful. And this is true, you know, in the bathroom, keep all your makeup in a little container. And when you do your makeup, you get out that little container. Or, you know, doing bath time for the kids. We have all their little toys in a basket that's in a cupboard and in their bathroom. You know, you want to organize to the extent that it makes your life enjoyable. When I look at my freezer and I see this, it makes me really happy. If you could not care less, then you don't need to do this. If your, you know, meal planning is going just fine, then, you know, you don't need to spend $6 on the little bins. But this is really helpful for me. That visual neatness really makes my heart calm and helps me get through my day. So simplifying and purging and organizing will make life easier for your kids too. Over the past few years, I've gotten rid of about 75% of our kids' toys. And I know that might sound a little extreme, but I kept finding that the fewer things that they had, the more satisfied they seemed to be. When we have a lot of toys, it's hard for them to even make a decision about what they want to play with. In a room overflowing with toys, this was maybe 4 years ago, I often found my son playing with these little pieces of paper that had dragons on them. He was really into How to Train Your Dragon, and so my husband had printed out a picture of a bunch of these different dragons and cut them out and then laminated them. So toys as far as the eye could see, and for days, he was just sitting on his bed playing with his little dragons. So they can really be very satisfied with a lot less than what you think. We keep almost all the toys in those little fabric bins that you would put in the cubbies. We keep those on a high shelf in their closet, containerizing. And each child can have one bin of toys down at a time. And one small bin usually keeps them happy for a week or more. And when they start to get bored, they come and ask for a new bin of stuff. Right now we have a couple bins of dress-up clothes, some dolls and doll accessories. A few boy bins with like figurines and army men and weapons. We have a bin of woodblocks, Duplos, train tracks and trains, and a couple bins of stuffed animals. That's important. And then we have bikes and skateboards and stuff out in the garage and a few things in the basement. But don't be afraid to really pare down your kids' toys. They won't be deprived, I promise. The next next point is streamlining, and this is where we're getting a little bit type A. So we're only streamlining to the extent that you need this in your life. Probably every couple of months, I'm thinking about what I need to streamline in my schedule. And the reason for this is our families change over time. So you kind of have to go back and reevaluate. Is the routine still working for me? Do we need to change something? We used to have family devotions before bed, but one of the things that we were finding was if the kids were having a hard time doing what they need to do, getting through their chores, getting through all those things, it was cutting into our family devotion time. And we didn't want that to happen. We also didn't want to use that as a punishment. So we moved family devotions to during our meal time, when we're about halfway through the meal, kids have food in their mouth, they're kind of settled down because they're eating, and they're more of a captive audience. And so that's when we have family devotions. And then later on in the evening, if they are digging around and not doing the things that they are supposed to be doing, it's going to cut into their story time. And they really want to know what happens next in their book, so they're very motivated to get things done. I would love to say that my children are spiritual enough that they never want to miss reading the Bible, but that's not always the case. So we switched some things around to make sure that was prioritized in our life. One of the goals that I had for myself was to use more natural bath and body products. And for a while, I spent a lot of time making my own shampoo and conditioner and lotion and stuff like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. Those are all good things to do if you want to have a more natural lifestyle. But one time in Amish country, I picked up a shampoo bar, and it changed my life. It is moisturizing, so I don't need to use as much lotion. It works both as a shampoo and a body bar. It was not any more expensive than making the stuff myself, and I just bought it and then I was done. I didn't have to worry about making any products. So that ideal that I had of wanting to use more natural products was a good one, but I wasn't actually getting it done because it was too much for my life at that point. And so the shampoo bar came and saved the day. So that is an example of how I streamlined things in my life a little bit to make things easier. Okay, we should be on to goals at this point. Oh, I'm behind on the PowerPoint. A well-ordered life allows you to evaluate where you are and where you'd like to be, and setting goals will help you to get you where you want to go. I'm not talking about making a five-year plan, doing anything super ambitious, although that's good. If you feel like you want to do some long-term planning, that is awesome. But being able to evaluate where you are and where you'd like to be can help you begin to make some steps to make changes. So maybe that means you want to work on having better eating habits, or maybe it's spending more time praying for your kids. Maybe you want to get your budget under control. None of that stuff happens without a plan, and most of the time that means adding something to your routine or creating new habits. Years ago, Bobette talked about taking a personal retreat, spending a few hours on your own, thinking and praying through what's going on in your life, your marriage, your parenting, those sorts of things. And it was an idea that really resonated with me. And ever since then, at least once a year, I've taken a long morning to go be by myself. I usually go to a coffee shop, but you can go anywhere you like. Some people don't like to go places and be by themselves. So you can do this with a buddy, as long as you both can kind of work on your own, not chit-chat together. The library, if your mom's close by and her house is quiet, you can go to your mom's house, any place where you can have a little bit of time to just stop and kind of evaluate things a little bit. Or if, you know, dad or grandma is willing to take the kids out of the house for a few hours, you can do it at home. If I'm at home, I'm usually distracted, so I always do this outside the house. But I get up early, I take my Bible, my bullet journal, I spend a few hours just thinking and praying through my life. Like to listen to ocean waves on my tablet to drown out distractions. So I highly recommend trying it at least once. Now that I've started doing this, I do it a couple of times a year, once for just my general family life, and then I also do this for school and for childbirth education, because it's really helped me to focus on what's important, what are the rocks in my life, what are the pebbles, what's the sand, where do I need to focus my time, and it's been a really helpful discipline for me. And lastly, we have our little self-care heart. I put that off to the side because it's not an area that you want to neglect at any point, even if you're in survival mode and you want to take good care of yourself. Remember how a year after my baby was born, I was struggling to walk normally? Well, I finally got myself to the chiropractor, found out that my pelvis was a little off center and rotated. and that was causing a lot of pain for me. And getting chiropractic adjustments for just a few months made a world of difference. And it was stupid for me to put that off for so long and struggle needlessly. And during those hard 2 years when I felt so burnt out and discouraged, I didn't ask for help until I felt like my life was falling apart. And I wish I would have reached out sooner, because what I really needed was some perspective and encouragement. So take care of your heart health. Take care of your body. Get enough sleep, eat well and exercise, take time to relax. It's easy to stop doing these things when you're chasing little ones around, but in the end, you won't have a whole lot to offer your husband and your kids if you're running yourself ragged. And be mindful of your spiritual condition. We'll always have ups and downs when it comes to how well we're managing our homes. It's the nature of life. Whether you're at the top of your game or you're struggling with homemaking, the important thing is that we're relying on the Lord and seeking pleasure in Him. All the things we talked about today are just tools to keep our focus on what's most important. Not having a Pinterest-perfect home or a precisely timed schedule or always completing all our to-do lists, but knowing Christ as Savior and relying on Him for the strength and desire to serve our families well. So all of the homemaking pyramid of greatness, it's just a tool so that we can have our life together and not be distracted from the rocks, from what's truly important in our life. So let's take a minute to pray, and then we can spend some time discussing. Father, our struggle is not against dishes and laundry and our to-do list, but allowing those things to draw us away from what's really important, knowing You and serving in this high calling of being a wife and mom and homemaker. Father, I pray for joy as we check these mundane tasks off our list, as we go about the day just doing the things that we have to do to keep our homes running. I pray that we would find pleasure in it, because we are ultimately serving You and serving our families well, Father. I pray for encouragement for all of us as we go home to find rhythms and routines that work well for our family, so that we have more time to focus on the rocks in our life and what is important. Pray these things in Christ's name. Amen. All right, so take a few minutes and get something to eat, and then we can start our discussion.